So you don't have to worry about that one.
Okay.
Okay. So everyone, I know everyone here. So, but I'm going to say it just, you know, kind of, out of habit, because this is technically a special episode of No Law Firm Left Behind. So, I'm Jim Gass. Thanks for joining. And, our company is Splicing Consulting. Every week we do a law firm podcast / live stream to LinkedIn. We're not live streaming right now to LinkedIn, and the podcast will be published later on today. It takes a little bit of time for us to get that out there. But today's a special episode. I'm joined today by my good friend, Rich Jack. Rich is with ConnectWise, and we're going to talk about some practical steps to protect your law firm from downtime and cyber attacks. And many of you I know already, and I know a little bit about your environments. This is really important stuff. And I just want to make sure that all bases are covered for every law firm that we can possibly help. So Rich, you know, I don't usually talk about my guests too much. I let them introduce themselves. So I'm not going to leave that standard. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind.
Sure, Jim. I appreciate the invite. Great to see you again, as always. My name is Rich Jack. I've spent about the last 25 years or so managing IT resources and data networking and phone systems, you name it. You know, a lot has changed, a lot has evolved during that time. I've spent the last 7 years educating and equipping technology service providers with the resources and the tools combat modern day security threats. So as part of that role, I basically, you know, advise and provide, you know, guidance and guidelines as far as best practices, how to best avoid any of these unwanted circumstances, and by all means, make sure that you're being proactive when thinking about this, because, you know, no business is too small, and everybody is at risk. And it's not our intent to, you know, scare the daylights out of people with this discussion today, but just continue the awareness around that topic.
You know, I think a healthy dose of fear helps a little bit, right? Not over the top. I think it's really important, because it really, without a little bit of fear, there's not the concern that it needs, right? And so on that note, though, do you have maybe a little bit of insight into a recent partner's situation with an existing customer? Obviously not tipping the cards too much, of course, for identity.
Yeah. So unfortunately, this happens all the time, right? So it's on a daily basis. You tip the Sonys am I good?
Yeah, you're good. Sorry.
So you hear about the big boys out there because those are the ones that hit the news wire. But unfortunately, small business is just as big of a target as large businesses. You just don't hear about those as frequently because people try to sweep those under the rug. They don't want their reputation to be tarnished. They don't want their customers to think that their credentials have been violated in any way. So we are constantly getting brought in, preferably before any attack happens. But oftentimes it's too late, and, you know, we hear about somebody coming in through a phishing email or an email compromise where somebody's masquerading as somebody that they're not. That's still one of the most prevalent ways for people to gain access to somebody else's system, is to pretend that they're somebody's boss. They need gift cards. You know, they're tied up. They can't get to it. Click on this link. And the minute you click on the link, then, you know, the next email that you're getting, is a ransom note that, you know, you've been closed down, basically. And typically what happens is, you know, especially on a small business front, you always hear, well, nobody cares about, I'm too small. Nobody cares about my data. Nobody cares about my information. And for the most part, that is an accurate statement. People don't care about your personal information and those kind of things, but they do care about your money. And they do know that, you know, one false step, and they, if they do lock down your computer and your credentials and all your data, you know, then you're out of business, basically. And the only way that you're going to get that back is to, you know, by paying those fine people what they're demanding. And then even then, you know, you're most likely not going to get all of your data back. But to answer your question directly, Jim, unfortunately, this is the world we live in. We get calls, I wouldn't say daily, but certainly weekly, where there's been an intrusion, a bunch of abnormalities, and we're doing what we can to prevent those before they happen.
Yeah, it's a real sad world that's out there right now. And I've been through a lot of them, actually, more than I'd like to talk about. And there's no hidden agenda here. I'm a consulting company. That's what my business is, right? And I hate to make money that way. It just breaks my heart to make money that way. The amount of time and energy and lost revenue that goes into a cyber breach is just uncanny, right? It's not something that people really think about. One of the other things I hear all the time, Rich, is, so you said, you know, nobody cares about my data. Yeah, you're right. Nobody cares about the data. You care about your money, and that's all they really want. But the other thing I hear from business owners and law firms a lot more than I like to hear is, I can't afford to be down for a certain amount of time, right? You know, wow, you really think about that for a second. You know, when you say that as a business owner, when you say I can afford to be down, okay, you're saying I can afford not to serve my customers. I can afford not to make money. I can afford to sit here and then pay my employees for doing nothing, because that's essentially what's happening at that time. So that's another one of those really bad stories I hate to hear. Good business owners hate downtime. And that's what we found our business on, is, you know, avoiding downtime. So it's a sad, sad case. But the thing that most people don't think about isn't just the you know, hey, my stuff's locked and I got to pay a ransom. My insurance company will cover that, right? Well, if you don't have cyber liability insurance, I can promise you your insurance is going to pay for that, okay? Nobody's going to pay for that. It's going to come out of your pocket. So if you don't have cyber liability insurance, the first practical thing that you can do right now, go get cyber liability insurance. If you don't know anything about it, don't just sign any old policy. Would you agree, Rich? You know, have somebody look at it, talk to me about it. We've got some great insurance resources. What do you, how do you feel about cyber liability insurance?
It's almost a necessity at this point. But just keep in mind, you know, the longer this goes on, the more difficult it is to ascertain a cyber liability insurance policy, because the prevalence of these attacks and the multitude of them, the requirements and the paperwork required to, you know, gain access to one of those policies is a lot more stringent than it used to be historically. Yeah. Just like any insurance company, and they're going to look for ways how not to pay out. So you're going to have all those boxes checked. And that's where a lot of the security things that we're going to talk about today come into play, because they're going to be some of those expectations that the underwriter is going to want to see before they're going to contemplate, you know, providing you with a cyber liability insurance. But realistically, we're getting to that point in time, and we're already there. Shouldn't say we're getting there. We're already there where, you know, this has to be taken seriously, because, you know, most businesses can afford $10,000, $20,000, whatever that number is. They can't afford the average breach of $350,000. And that's for small businesses. We hear about the large multi-million dollar deals, but the small to medium businesses, the average cost of regaining and reassessing your data starts at about $250,000. So right then and there, you know, that's a solid enough reason, beyond all the other reasons we talked about previously, yeah, about business reputation, those kind of things that can kill your business as much as being down. And lastly, yeah, on your point, which was a great one, Jim, you know, in terms of downtime, you need a plan. You know, you need a response, yeah, plan in advance, because, you know, this happens all the time, and you have to kind of be ready for it. So you have to realize, you know, how much downtime can you can you afford a, and you know, what is your recovery time and how far back do you need your data to even, you know, move forward or whatnot? So what I wanted to ask you, Jim, real quick is, you know, turn the tables here a little bit on you, if you don't mind.
I like that.
You know, what kind of a, you know, you're a security practitioner, you know, helping out your customers, you know, what kind of, you know, awareness, you know, training, ideas, what kind of things do you kind of go through on a checklist with your customers and end users?
Wow, nobody ever does that to me. So thanks a lot. I appreciate that. Seriously, though, we have what we call a cybersecurity stack, right? And we're proud. We really work hard at it. I'm proud that we have a great stack. I'm sad that we have to have it, right? And so it is a stack that includes web filtering, patching, third-party patching, let's see, device hardening. I mean, you know, lots of great stuff, right? And we're evaluating that every year. We make our stack decisions generally in the fall. And if we're swapping something out or if we're moving to, you know, adding something to the stack, it always seems like we're adding anymore. The stack just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, which is one of the reasons we're actually talking here today. And so, you know, I will say that the number one thing is the communication channel that we have in the stack. And that's not even a product. It's kind of part of what we do, right? And so we're meeting with our customers or at least sending them reports at a minimum monthly so that they can see and understand where things are at, right? We like those monthly reports and then on a quarterly basis as well. You know, we're not putting our heads in the sand on this. You know, we've got a team of people here at the office that are monitoring it with third party vendors that are actually auditing and looking at our stuff. And we eat our own dog food on top of that, you know. So, you know, we're applying all these things to us and making sure that we're clean. Because if we get breached, guess what? You know, a whole bunch of customers could get breached too. That's happened. So good stack. I do think that the education part of it's good. So awareness and communication is the first thing. You said that, you know, let's put a plan together and let's meet on that plan. Let's talk about it. And then ongoing education through phishing testing and, you know, different updates like through maybe like lunch and learns, which I really enjoy the lunch and learns. By the way, if anybody wants a lunch and learn, let me know. We usually buy pizzas for the lunch and learns. And then I think the other thing is the end users, right? Let's get them a regular cycle of audited, right? Not just send them a video, watch this video. Let's make sure they watch that video, right? And so that's an end user cybersecurity education. But kind of segue, Rich, I think this is a good segue, actually. Let's talk about one of the next things that's very practical that makes good sense. And, you know, we've been doing it, you know, here and there a little bit with customers that have been asking for it, but it's on those cyber liability insurance applications now is, you know, what we call SIM and SOC, security information management and stuff like that, log management, and somebody monitoring these logs. And then also talk about the higher level of advanced endpoint security. You know, we use WebRoot and I love WebRoot, you know, but you know, it's gotten to a point where it needs to be higher than a WebRoot, something more intelligent. And so SentinelOne, for example, let's talk about, pick those apart a little bit. Say why those are the next practical steps.
Yeah, so let's reverse that order slightly. Yeah, okay. And just talk about where we were and where we're heading with this. When you talk about endpoint protection, you know, the traditional antivirus really was a reactive tool because at the outset, nobody knew any better, right? So you had to wait for an attack to happen before you could catalog that and library that and know to look for that in the future. And then therefore, once you have seen known threats, you could block them. That was typically what the original antivirus looked like. We've graduated way beyond that, thankfully, now to a much more intelligent structure where we're using, you know, behavioral, what we've seen people do in the past, what they don't do, more importantly, and some AI and things like that, where one of the common things you'll hear these days are what they call zero-day threats. And what that means in layman's terms is that it's nobody's seen that particular virus or you know, Trojan or whatever you want to call it, that's never been seen before. But these systems are now intelligent enough to stop them in their tracks and investigate them if they look somewhat suspicious or abnormal. That's something we didn't have in the past. So now we have a much more reactive approach. And then when you take it to the next level, not only do you have the ability to see what's going on within the network and depict it graphically, you can see what's transversed through the network in the modern day tools. So you could even stop, kill, quarantine, sandbox, blow up some of these things, see if they're real, see if they're false positives, and then take the appropriate actions, which can include, you know, taking a machine offline in some cases, or ultimately, and you mentioned Sentinel One, one of their, you know, trademarked, you know, copyrighted tools that nobody else has the capability of, you know, restoring to a rollback to a previous healthier state, which basically would kill anything that came in at that point in time. So when you couple that with a security operations center, which is manned by, you know, 100 or 200, if you're dealing with the right folks, normally those are very large entities that most folks couldn't afford to put together themselves, because, you know, to pay 150 or 200 engineers, that's a big undertaking, not to even mention the machinery that goes along with that and the know-how. But those folks work on you and your customer's behalf 24/7, monitoring this, responding, remediating, and letting you and your customers know what's happening and that they're safe, giving them peace of mind. So that's endpoint stuff, right? That's laptops, that's desktops, that's all that fun thing. But when you talk about getting a deeper visibility into the overall network, because things have changed drastically, the threat landscape has changed radically as well. These folks, they realize, you know, the old tricks don't always work anymore, mm-hmm. right? So they're going to come in through the back door, if you will. They're going to come in through a copier, or they're going to come in through an access point or a camera or a firewall, an mm-hmm. open port on a firewall, where they can gain visibility into your network. They don't always have to prey on an individual, which has always been the weakest link in the past. Somebody clicking on somebody, something doing something erroneously. These hackers have graduated beyond that. So when you get to a security incident and event management platform, that's taking it to the next level. That's also not only giving you visibility of all the security logs on the endpoints on the network, but everything else that can be identified on that network, whether it's a firewall, whether it's the local printer or an access point, all the things that we just talked about, those are all encompassed and providing those security logs as well. So anytime there is any kind of an incident or some abnormality or, you know, bad actors poking around, you get that visibility again through that the security operations center that you had mentioned, and they're looking at this 24/7. So when you combine those two tools, that's really where you have the cream of the crop of the visibility and the capability to remediate and respond and resolve to all and any of those threats, and be in a position to be capable of reflecting what has transpired, sharing that with the stakeholders so that they're kept abreast of, you know, what you're bringing to the table on their behalf. Because it's easy to say, hey, you need the security. And then, you know, 6 months later, somebody says, hey, Jim, I paid you for this, but I haven't seen anything. What are you doing for me? Did I just, you know, burn my money or whatever? And it's a good news, bad news story. The good news is you didn't hear anything, which means you've been protected. The bad news is, folks, if you're not seeing any value or any visibility of what you've been doing for them, that they're just assuming you're not doing anything. Yeah. And we know that's not you, Jim. We know that you're constantly, you know, looking to help out. But to answer your question, it's a layered approach, right? There's no silver bullet. You know, there's no one trick pony. You know, an in-depth security approach is layered, you know. So we talk about, a lot of times we do use like a house or a bank analogy. Sometimes, you know, it's easier to convey to folks rather than, you know, talk about security tools. Nobody really wants to learn about that, you know, and they certainly don't want to learn about it after the fact. But we usually, you know, kind of correlate it to, you know, what goes on in a house. And typically we use what they call the NIST framework, which is a security framework that's been put together, you know, some time ago. And it's based on, you know, five basic principles. It's identify, that's the very first critical step, and then protect, then detect, respond, and then lastly recover in the case something, you know, unfortunate did happen. But when you talk about the, you know, the house analogy, and you start with the identify, you identify what's of value in the house. And then if you're, you know, asking folks, you know, what is of value to you in your house? I mean, hopefully the first answer is going to be, you know, the family. Yeah. Even though you'd be surprised, a lot of times people say their TVs or, you know, their jewelry and those kind of things. But really, all of those are fit into the, you know, the identify. Once you identify what's your electronics, computer, and then naturally you say, well, what's more important to you, your TV or your computer? And obviously the answer 99% of the time is going to be computer, because it has your stuff on there, your important data, maybe your banking information, that kind of thing. You can replace a TV probably within an hour if you went to Best Buy or wherever, but it's hard to get your data back if your computer was stolen. You know, obviously there's ways to back that up and stuff. But when you go into the protect level, you know, you're talking about prevention mechanisms. You know, what is it easier to rob somebody if the door is wide open and unlocked, and, you know, there's, you know, a sign in the front yard saying we're on vacation for 2 weeks? Or is it better if you have your doors locked, windows closed, yard signs that you're protected or whatnot? And then when it comes to detection, you know, obviously there's alarm systems, motion sensors, you know, neighborhood watch or nosy neighbor, whatever you want to call them, you know, doorbell, ring doorbells, those kind of things everybody you're using today. And then your response on at your house, you know, certainly can be, you know, pretty a wide array of ways too. It can be insurance. We talked about that on the cyber side. Maybe you have a big dog that's going to take a chunk out of somebody's leg. Maybe you have a baseball bat sitting next to the couch, those kinds of things. And then when it comes to recovery, again, using the house analogy, you know, emergency equipment after the fact to get you back to normal, you know, backup systems, generators, those kind of things. But you really, you know, those are the kinds of things that you use in a house. When you correlate that to security, you know, it's a lot of the same kinds of things. When you talk about identify, you're looking about doing an assessment. You're looking about doing a security scan of the network to see where those gaps or vulnerabilities in your protection. And when you get to protect, and even, you know, the next couple, protect, detect, and respond, that modern day endpoint security or deeper dive security that Sentinel One offers, which is the analogy that you used before, that covers all the rest of those channels. But there are other tools that you know, cover some of them, but not all of them, you know, whether it's an email security tool. And then when you talk about, you know, the security incident and event management tool, that's purely a detect mechanism, you know, and that's where you have the ability to go into those security logs and see what happened and see what's going on in the network. And then that coupled with the Sentinel One, respond type platform allows you to remediate and resolve that. And then lastly, on the recover side, certainly you want to be in a position where you have either an incident response plan in place or some kind of backup and disaster recovery plan in place. So it's kind of a long-winded analogy, but we always felt that was kind of a better way to kind of show that, more so than just throwing a bunch of techie terms at people and, you know, seeing the eyes spinning, you know, in the heads.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I think it's a great idea. I understand analogies better, you know, and I always use analogies. I think it's fantastic. I think the bank analogy is really good as well. And we've talked about this one before, where your Sentinel One is kind of like your bank guard, right? You know, watching and looking for suspicious activity and suspicious visitors, right, to the bank. Your SIM is kind of like, you know, SIEM and SOC actually are like the people that are sitting behind your video cameras and watching stuff and then kind of correlating, you know, well, the guard walked over there, you know, and the guy came in this way and, you know, he's got a bulge on the side of him, you know, and all of this is done through a lot of artificial intelligence, right? AI plus a combination of human intervention. I'm correct in that, right?
Yes. Yeah. So right. The modern day technology encompasses all of the know-how of what we've learned historically. So those threats are stopped instantly and automatically because they're known bad. But the modern day technology takes that to the next level, utilizing artificial intelligence. And like I said before, it's a little scary sometimes, depending on how you think about it. But, you know, it knows how most folks act when they're in and around their laptop, right? So, you know, I can't remember the last time I put a drive in my laptop or whatever. And typically those are a no-no these days anyway. You want to kind of block those kind of things, but you get the point. You have the ability to see, you know, Nancy hasn't historically extracted Excel files or shared this or shared that or whatever. Those kind of things are kind of a dead giveaway. And then when you get into some of the more the SIEM and SOC type things, you have a deeper dive, like where people are logging in from, which is going to be a dead giveaway that there's an intruder or whatever, because one of the analogies, speaking of analogies that I think, you know, hits, you know, top of mind is, you know, the whole impossible travel, analogy you know, Joe's logging in from China at 8:07 and then he's in Canada at 8:09. You know, that's kind of, you know, going to, you know, send off some, you know, sirens and alerts and whatnot, because you're going to see that, you know, that's not possible. So somebody's in there mucking around. So those are some of the advantages that we didn't have in the past. And then lastly, you know, along that topic, Jim, and this is, you know, something that I know that you're happy about, is that those tool sets now allow folks like yourself to share that information and, you know, with the stakeholders and the business owners and the powers to be that are interested in that kind of stuff, to say, hey, look, you know, when you were sleeping last night, because the criminals never take time off, it could be Christmas Eve at, you know, midnight, and that's probably where they do their best work. And what people think is, hey, I got hacked and I immediately, you know, they immediately just got me. That's not true at all. They typically, they do their homework. They're in your system and they're in there for, you know, 30, 60, 90 days before they lock anything down, because they want to make sure they have exactly what they want, and they want to make sure that they're hitting you where it hurts. So, you know, the tool set has graduated in it, and it had to, because the landscape continues to evolve, and not necessarily in a better fashion, but the tools need to keep up with that. And I think we've done a pretty good job of late, but we can never let our guard down. You definitely need to continue, you know, to evaluate that on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, I was on a local news station the other day for the Kroger bomb hoaxes, and they want to talk about that and Kohl's bomb hoaxes. And although it's not exactly cybersecurity, they asked me, you know, they correlated it to it. They asked me if they thought that these are dry runs, and I said, oh yeah, these are definitely dry runs for something that they're trying to figure out. There's a dress rehearsal for sure, you know, and holiday weekends, we just had a holiday weekend pass for Memorial Day. We kind of upped our game on a lot of different things on that. But yeah, they get in your environment and they're there for a while. You have to now assume you can't just take precautions to keep them out, to try to keep the doors locked. You have to assume that they're going to get in, and you got to have that guard dog watching, or yippy little, you know, chihuahua to let everybody know, you know, that they're in. So, well, Rich, this has been fantastic. I want to be respectful of everyone's time today, so we're going to end almost on the dot, if you don't mind. Real quick, if you're attending, great. I appreciate you attending. You'll get this news before anybody else. But if you're watching this on podcast, or listening to this on podcast, or watching a live stream on it, or a recorded live stream, I want you to know that we're going to have a workshop coming up on some steps that you can take to evaluate your environment. We did a do-it-yourself law firm cybersecurity assessment toolkit years ago, and we're going to kind of dust that off, update it, and I'm gonna give a session on how you can do that in the next couple of weeks. I'll send out some invites. I'll put links to get people to sign up and register for it. It's free, no cost. It's a free thing that we put together a long time ago, and I'll put it on all the social media platforms so everybody can get to it. So if you're looking for it and you're listening to this in a recorded session, the link will probably be below within the next day or so. So, Rich, thanks a lot. I appreciate it, everyone. I know you probably have questions. We're happy to answer the questions afterwards. So everyone's got my contact information, and I'll also email you as well. So please reach out anytime you want to just kind of talk about this stuff. But I'll also email you the dates on the workshop too. Rich, can't thank you enough.
I appreciate your time. I appreciate the invite. Stay safe. And again, thanks, Jim. And anything you need, I always enjoy talking to you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And one final plug, if you're not a member of No Law Firm Left Behind on LinkedIn, go look for No Law Firm Left Behind on LinkedIn and join the exclusive law firm group. It's there's a page, follow it, of course, but then join the group too. So thanks a lot, Rich. Until next time.
Have a good day. Take care.
Take care. Take care, everyone.